Good evening. Several years ago during the summer, I was giving a homily, and in this particular homily, I was pointing out some of the differences between Protestants and Catholics. And I was told after my homily by my pastor to not do that again, something pastors sometimes tell you, some associates more often than others. And I disagreed with him. I still disagree with him. Certainly, we should not belittle our Protestant brothers and sisters, and we certainly do need to recognize the similarities we have above our differences. But to say that we shouldn't be aware and have knowledge of the differences between Protestants and Catholics is to say we shouldn't know our Christian faith, to be ignorant of what it means to be a Catholic. So I'm sorry, Pastor. You lose. At the center of this debate between us is the question of what we call justification. In other words, we're wounded in our humanity, we're fallen, we're sinful. How do we become just again? How do we become saved? It all begins back in the 1500s with Martin Luther, when he came with his 99 theses. And many of you may be more familiar with others than others on this subject. It was the debate over faith and works. You see, around 1500, there was a practice in the church, in fact, an abuse of a practice of indulgences. What would often happen is a preacher would come to your town. Say we had a guest preacher here at Christ the King. And he would basically say, okay, if you give me $10 to fight the Muslims in the Holy Land, you can go to heaven. Sounds like a good deal, doesn't it? But it was an abuse. Certainly, there was a need to fund the works of the church, but not in exchange for salvation. And it was a very, very widespread abuse in the church. And one that was corrected. But it became synonymous with the idea that if we pay enough money, or if we say enough rosaries, or if we work hard enough, we can earn salvation. And that is not true. On the flip side of it, many fundamentalist Christians, and probably most prominent among them are some of the more fundamentalist Baptists, who would say it's by faith alone that you're saved, that your works don't matter, that all I have to do is accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior and I'm done. And that is not true either. In 1999, the Lutherans and the Catholics got together and published what they call the Joint Declaration on Justification, which is a really fancy way of saying, guys, we've got an agreement. It only took us 500 years, but we've got an agreement. And this is what they said, very simply, that it is by grace that we are saved. Not faith, not works, but by grace that we are saved. Grace and how it works is the key to this question of how God saves us from our sinfulness. And it's also the subject of our gospel today. Grace is defined in the catechism as this. This is what it says. Grace is favor, the free and undeserved help that God gives to us to respond to His call to become children of God, adoptive sons, partakers of the divine nature and of eternal life. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on grace. It is a huge subject. Incidentally, I did go back and look at my class in seminary on grace, and I did really good on my paper in that class, so you should be at least a little encouraged. Jesus teaches us, first of all, in the gospel today, that grace is generous and undeserved. Look at the workers in the gospel today. Even these first workers who are coming at 6 a.m. in the morning. Kids, can you imagine? You think you got it hard now, getting up for school by 8? Can you imagine getting up and being to work by 6 in the morning? And spending 12 hours at it, outside in the heat. And these first workers are promised the usual day's wage, which was about $50. Now you might think, especially in our times, that that's not much. But you have to keep in mind these were day laborers. These were people without a job. And what they would do is they would show up in the marketplace hoping that somebody would hire them. I remember I was down in Atlanta with my friend Javier, and he's been deported since then, God bless him. But he was driving me through Atlanta, and he pointed to this group of men standing on the corner. And he said, "Do you know why they're standing there?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Because they're out of work." And I said, "So why are they standing there?" And he said, "Because they're hoping somebody will drive by and hire them." So these were men who were on the verge of poverty. So $50 a day was a pretty good deal. First of all, God takes us from this poverty that we experience on this. And you know what I'm talking about in your day-to-day lives when you experience this deep need for God. When the stresses of life and the stresses of relationship put you in a position where you don't know what to do, and so you're in a sense standing out on the corner waiting for something to come along that will help you. God is first and foremost going to, in a sense, hire you. He's going to come to your aid to answer your need. Moreover, the master pays the guy who came at 5 o'clock and worked for only 1 hour the same as he pays the guy who came at 6 o'clock and worked for 12 hours. This master that we serve as Christians is extremely generous. Did the guys who came at 5 o'clock deserve 50 bucks for working an hour? No, not at all. Now, I know a lot of you, if you're like me, you're thinking of your quickest advantage. Why wouldn't I just wait until the end of the day and come out at 5 and work for an hour and get 50 bucks? Well, did you notice that when the master came out, what did he promise the servants at 9 o'clock, noon, 3 o'clock, and 5 o'clock? He says, "I will pay you what is just." They expected to get a proportional amount. We can't take advantage of the grace of God, but we need not be surprised when it is generous. The grace of God is also unfair. Believe it or not, it's unfair. I don't know how many times I'm over in the school and addressing a discipline problem with our students, and the students say, "Well, that's not fair." Yeah, that's the way the grace of God works. You may just get out of a punishment. And let's all hope that's true. He says to these other laborers later in the day, "I will pay you what is just." And the first workers get jealous. The teaching that Jesus is trying to get across to us as Christians is that we should not share in that jealousy. I can imagine myself standing there before the judgment seat of Jesus Christ, thinking, "Okay, I've worked all my life to trying really hard to be a good Christian, and here I am. I know I'm messed up, but I've worked really hard at it." And then I see right beside me, maybe he happened to die at the same time, this guy who walks in at the last minute. He's a notorious sinner. He's killed thousands of people. He's been accused of genocide and just an ugly, ugly guy. Maybe it's Hitler. Walks in right next to me to the judgment seat of Christ. And we both get into heaven. Not that I'm assuming anything. What does it say about me if I'm jealous of him? What does it say about us if we're jealous of the mercy that God gives to somebody who's, in our minds, a worse sinner? So number one, grace is generous, undeserved, and unfair. Secondly, grace does require our participation. And this goes right to the core of one of our debates with many of the Protestants out there, that works are required. Works of faith, works that are motivated by the gift of God's grace. We're not trying to earn God's grace, but work should result from His grace. Notice that these laborers are standing out there all day waiting for somebody to hire them. They're eager to work for the master. Are you eager to work for the master, or is it just a convenience? Because for too many of us, especially some of us at 5:30 Mass, it's just a convenience. These guys were vigilant and persistent. It says they've been standing out there all day waiting for somebody to hire them. I don't know about you, but if I'd been standing out there since 6 a.m. and 4 o'clock rolls around, I'm going home. I'm breaking out a cold one and I'm going to sit down and watch something. I'm not standing around here all day. Yet these guys are so eager to find work and to work for the master that they show their persistence, the same persistence that God is asking of you in a faith that is motivated by His grace. The question isn't, will God accept you in the 11th hour at 5 p.m.? The question is, are you going to be ready to be hired? Are you going to be ready to respond to His invitation at the 11th hour? In closing, I would like to share with you two quotes from two saints which really speak to these points. St. Thomas More, the subject of the movie A Man for All Seasons, has this story to share. If a man lowers a rope into a well and pulls someone out who could not escape by himself, wouldn't it be true that the man in the well didn't climb out under his own power? And yet, he still contributed something of his own to the process by hanging on to the rope and not letting it get away. The freedom of the will is like that. It can do nothing without grace, but when the divine goodness grants grace generously, the free will of a good man holds fast to it and cooperates with it properly. My brothers and sisters, we are that man stuck down in that well, and God is throwing you a rope. It is a gift. Will you respond? John of Avila says this: those who imagine they can attain holiness by any wisdom or strength of their own will find themselves, after many labors and struggles and weary efforts, only the farther from possessing it. And this in proportion to their certainty that they of themselves have gained it. In other words, if you think by your wisdom or your strength or your works you can obtain God's grace, you're only going to be the further from it. Grace is a generous and undeserved gift, but it does require your cooperation, your readiness to respond to it, and your obedience to the Master. No matter if you're coming here for the first time or if you've been coming to Christ the King your whole life, if you've never sinned a day in your life, or if you've had a life full of sin, Jesus issues you the same invitation. The same invitation that he gave to his first disciples. Come and follow me.